Good morning to all of you. I'm very impressed with each person who came out in this cold weather, and very happy to have you each here, honored to have you each here. I'd like to explain why I'm being so careful with these source sheets. It's not just that I work carefully on this talk, and I may give it again at some time, but it's also that these sources come from archives at Yeshiva University that have special rules about them. And you're not allowed to quote from these papers unless you have permission from the archives at YU and the purpose for which you're going to quote. So I was asked to collect them at the end of the talk. If you would like a copy, just give me your name, and I'll put you in touch with Shuli Berger, who's in charge of archives at the YU Library, and then you would be able to use it in quoting if you would like to use it in any way of work that you're going to do. I'd like to give you an outline of the talk so you know where we're heading. I'm going to start by speaking about women in Tanakh and the way that women's intelligence has always been respected. Of course, you all know the pasuk that's said every Friday night from Mishlei, Pi ha-pascha b'chachma. She opens her mouth in wisdom, v'toras chesed al-lashona, the distinctive quality of kindness and compassion of the Jewish woman. I'd like to show that learning always took place. Sometimes it took place privately with members of the family. Sometimes it took place with tutors for a small group. But there has always been Jewish learning for women. You really cannot be an observant Jew without knowing something. So there's always been Jewish learning for women. The difference in our time is that we now have formal schooling for women, which is something we did not have previously. And we have to give credit to the person who really originated the entire idea of the way education is done for Jewish youngsters today, and who really probably, in some sense, saved Jewish life through his innovation. And that is Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch, Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, who was the first one to have the idea of making a school where you would teach Limudei Kodesh, Jewish studies, and Limudei Chol, secular studies, under one roof. That innovation, back in the middle of the 19th century in Frankfurt, in Germany, has led to what is today the model across the world for every day school that we have. That innovation really saved education for young Jewish people. Interesting that Rav Hirsch had a stipulation that everyone who taught secular studies in that school, Limudei Chol in that school, had to be a Shomer Mitzvos. It would be wonderful if we could continue that legacy. Unfortunately, it's not easy to stay at a school, and we often cannot follow that original model. But it has been the model, and that school was for boys and for girls. Rav Hirsch strongly advocated universal education for every Jewish boy and every Jewish girl. And that's a very important thought to keep in mind. And he was really basing it on all of Jewish tradition, but in particular, a quotation from the Gemara that you have at the top of one of the pages. Let's see which page I should describe it as. It's the Torah that has the page that has a picture of a school in Latvia. But it says in Sanhedrin, Gemara Sanhedrin, "Batlu midan va'ad ber sheva v'lo matzu am ha'aretz, migivas v'ad antripas v'lo matzu tino v'tinokis." Ish v'isha, shlo ha'yubiki in b'hilchos tumah v'tahara. In the time of Hizkiyahu HaMelech, there was such a revolution in Jewish life, and we were taken from not knowing to knowing, to such an extent that you could go the length and breadth of Israel, from the north to the very south, east to west, and you would not find a little boy or girl, a man, and I underline v'isha, or a woman, who were not thoroughly proficient in all the halachos, in all the laws of Tumah and Tahara. We translate that cleanliness and uncleanliness. It's not really a good translation, but what's permitted, what's not permitted, and what's permitted. Now, these are very intricate halachos. And to say that everyone, man and woman, little boy and little girl, was proficient at that time tells you that that is the ideal that we're striving for, that every Jew should be knowledgeable. Unfortunately, in our time, 90% of Jews have no connection to Jewish knowledge, but that's a separate problem that we should all be working on. So Rav Hirsch was the innovator, And he was followed by schools that were in Kovna, which is a town that's on a map, if you look at a map of Lithuania, in Kelm, in Telz, in Panevėžys, in Riga. There were girls' schools. Concurrent with that was the founding of the Beis Yaakov movement, with the first school in 1917 being the one that, the name that you all recognize, Sarah Schnierer, founded in Krakow. But names that should be equally well known to us are the names of Rabbi Joseph Karlbach, Rabbi Dr. Joseph Karlbach. Some of you may know about his son, Rabbi Shlomo Karlbach, who was the Mashgiach Ruchni at Chaim Berlin for a number of years, or his granddaughter, Elisheva Karlbach Joffin, the outstanding professor of Jewish history, who now occupies the chair at Columbia University that Yosef Yerushalmi used to occupy, and who was voted repeatedly at Queens College, the outstanding professor of the year when she taught Jewish history there. This is a family that has a wonderful, continuing legacy of involvement in Jewish education. Those names should be equally known to us because Rabbi Karlbach was the founder and the person who ran the school in Kovna during World War I when he got caught there. And that school, again, was a prototype for all the other schools that began, high schools for girls, later seminaries for young women, and the education that we know today. It's interesting to note that the Shalamet School, the first school for girls in this country, was founded in 1929 in Brooklyn. Borough Park seems to have been a very fortunate community. It had several schools for boys and the Shalamet School for girls. And there's a proposal at that time that there should be Shalamet schools across the country. There were attempts to start these schools, and a number of schools opened but closed because parents were not yet ready to send their kids to yeshiva in this country. In fact, a young man named Seth Farber, who now heads Itim in Israel, where he helps Russian Jews cope with the bureaucracy of the Rabbanut, he tried to write a doctoral thesis about schools that had opened and closed, but he found that nobody kept the records, so it was very hard to trace where there were schools that had been. And instead, he wrote a history of Maimonides School in Brookline, Massachusetts. But I do know that there was this proposal of Shalamet schools across the country, and I even found out that the day school in Elizabeth, which originally I thought my father had founded in 1940-41, the JEC, the Jewish Educational Center, actually, my grandfather had tried twice before that to start day schools in Elizabeth, my grandfather, Rav Prale. And one he started in 1920, closed in 1923 because he could not get enough students to register. And one that he started in 1930 was called the Shalamet School and probably was part of this effort to start Shalamet schools across the country, but it closed in 1934. So in 1940-41, that was the third time that the attempt was made to start a day school in Elizabeth, New Jersey. That was the one that succeeded. But that grandfather, my grandfather Rav Prale, wrote a booklet for the Agudas HaRabbanim, the Union of Orthodox Rabbis, in which it was called A Handbuch für Yiddische Frauen. It was a handbook for Jewish women, and it was supposed to be to encourage Jewish women to keep mitzvahs. But in writing that book, he faced very squarely what the problem was, and he said, women don't know enough. And he said, this country, now this was 1920, in the United States, we just give boys enough to get through their bar mitzvah. We want them to be able to say the brachos to Lane at the bar mitzvah, and then we want them to be able to say Kaddish, unfortunately, later on. So he joked that it seems that the word putter is running throughout this. The father wants to be putter from the obligation for the child, and then it has patira, when he passes away, he wants the child to take over again. But somehow girls were not going to have a bar mitzvah celebration, obviously. We're not going to be the ones responsible for Kaddish. And that's why girls' education was neglected. So instead of just writing about girls' need for education, girls' obligation to observe mitzvahs, he thought we have to start from the beginning, which is what are we teaching the girls? There was not a high school for girls in this country until the 1940s. In the 1940s, I didn't look up exactly when the Beis Yaakov in Williamsburg began, but it began after World War II. And in 1948, Yeshiva University opened Central High School. So in 1948, there were exactly two yeshiva high schools for girls in this entire country. Then in 1954, Stern College opened, and today, if you go to the internet and you look up www.seminarycentral.com, you will find that there are over 70 programs in Israel where a young woman can study, which is just a phenomenal thing. When I graduated from high school, there were two programs. One was Machon Gold, which was co-ed, and one was Leves Yaakov, which was not really yet a serious place. Rebbetzin, Bruria Huttner, what is her married name? Davis. Rebbetzin Davis and David. Rebbetzin David had not yet come. So it was, my parents did not see spending a year having a good time in Israel but not learning that much as a reason to have me go to Israel. And today, thank God, girls have such a wonderful variety of choices of where to learn. And of course, the future looks very bright. And just to give you one example of the change that has happened, we were discussing something about Tfilas HaDerech, my niece and I, and about whether you should be, if you're going to say Breinah Foshos on something or Al Hamithi on something, whether you should say it just before you begin the trip. So you're going right into the Hiratzon for the trip, for the Tfilas HaDerech, from having just said a bracha. And I said, being the age that I am, I'll ask Yossi, which means I'll ask my husband. And my niece Esther said, I'll look it up. I said, Esther, that's the difference in years. You went to Mechlala, you went to Stern College, you had postgraduate study, and you're going to look it up, and I'm going to ask my husband. And that's a very wonderful difference, because I think that the effect of the wonderful schooling that young women are getting today is much greater attention to mitzvos, much more concern with observing properly, and much more understanding of why the details are so important, which is something you cannot know unless you've learned. Once you've learned, you realize every detail is of supreme importance, and then you do indeed want to go and look it up. But don't worry, we can make it up. We don't have to just give it all over to the younger generation. We can still study. So let's look at what our history is. Our history is of women starting from the first Jewish woman, showing tremendous intelligence. I would say the three I's: intelligence, initiative, and insight. If you look at Sarah and Hashem saying, Kol Sher Tabara Lecha Sarah Shema B'Kala, Ki Yitzchak Yikarei Lecha Zara, listen to what Sarah says. She's right. Sarah is the one who, Yitzchak is the one who will inherit the legacy of Abraham, not Ishmael. Rivka, who understands that it should go through Yaakov, the continuity, it's not going to go through Esav. Leah and Rachel, who both do their best to be building up the Jewish nation. Miriam, who gives such good advice to her father Amram when he figures that it's all lost, we're not going to be able to continue Mitzrayim, I give up, and he stops living with his wife. And Miriam, who comes to her father and says, if you do this, you're worse than Paro, because you're not only stopping Jewish boys from being born, you're stopping Jewish girls from being born, you're stopping anybody from being born. Amram returns to Yocheved, and that's how Moshe is born. And Miriam throughout shows this ability to look after the Jewish people in different ways, whether it's washing her brother when he's in the basket, in the water, and making sure that it's Yocheved who comes to nurse her little brother, and leading the Shira at the Yom. After the men finish with Az Yashir Moshe Bnei Yisrael, we have in Shmos Tesvav, Vatikach Miriam Hanavia, Achos Aharon, Esatof B'yada. She is in charge, and she calls out to the women, Shiru LaShem Ki Ga'olga Susrakva Rabavayam. So we have an entire set of psukim devoted to Miriam leading the women in Shira, leading the women in song after the miracle at Yam Suf. Dvorah, of course, has a beautiful Shiras Dvorah, thanking Hashem for our victory in her time. When it comes to Shimshon's parents, Shimshon's mother understands that it's an angel who has come to her, and she understands she's getting directives from an angel. But her husband Manoach doesn't quite get it immediately, and she has to ask for the angel to appear again. She has to explain to him that's an angel. They can't give him food to eat. But each time she's described as the Eshes Manoach, the wife of Manoach, and we're never given her name. So even though she's shown in Shoftim to be the one who's more understanding. So Professor Uriel Simon had a very fine joke. He said, "What is the name of Shimshon's father? He is the husband of the Eshes Manoach." But that's how she's always described. We have Chana, who in her davening in Shmuel Aleph, and her praying for the son who's eventually born for Shmuel, Himedaberes Aliba, she spoke in her heart, Raksva Sahana Os, only her lips were moving, the Kola Lo Yishamea, and her voice was not heard. And she said, Veshpoch Es Nafshi Lifnei Hashem, and Merosi Chivikasi Dibarti Adhena, it's out of my grief, out of my sorrow, and not having a child yet, that I'm speaking this way to Hashem. When Eli questions why her lips are moving, but he's not hearing any sound. And of course, it's from Chana that we learn how to daven, and that's why we all daven silently now. Chana is the model for how a Jew should daven, and that it should be coming from one's heart, and that's why we can daven silently. And of course, when she finds fulfillment for her tefillah, she fulfills her neder, she fulfills her promise, and she says, and I find these some of the most moving words in all of Tanakh, El Hanar Hazeh Hispalalti, I prayed for this child. And that's how we all feel about her children. El Hanar Hazeh Hispalalti, that's being part of the continuity of the Jewish people, the essence of what Jewish motherhood is all about. The bracha, when Boaz marries Ruth, that said to them is, Yitain Hashem es ha'isha haba'a el beisecha korachel uchuleya, asher bon ushtehem espes Yisrael. That is the blessing to a Jewish woman about to get married, to be like Rachel and Leah. And of course we have the famous saying, Bina Yisera nitna banashim, that women have a greater understanding, somehow an intuitive understanding. And before anybody can counter and tell me that there's a saying, Nashim datin kalos, that women are kind of frivolous, there's another meaning of Nashim datin kalos. One meaning of it is that women are very easily swayed by someone's story because we have a compassionate nature, because we're kind. And that's why it's difficult for us to be dayanim, it's difficult for us to be, pardon me, to be judges, because we are too quick to understand when someone is giving a story. We do see in Gemara Nedarim that we're told that if a person made a neder, made a promise not to somehow benefit from a friend, there was a falling out between them. But even so, even when there's a falling out between them, Lameidu esbanav esbanosav mikra, the person can still teach his sons and his daughters Torah. So that's very interesting. That's in Gemara Nedarim. Again, an emphasis on teaching women. And of course, the best model, Bruria, who was the wife of Rabbi Meir, and who read texts closely and commented on them analytically. So for example, when her husband was annoyed, when Rabbi Meir was annoyed by people who were being very difficult in the neighborhood, and he said something about how he wished they were gone, so she said, what we have to hope is, Yitamu chatan min ha'aretz v'lo chotim. The pasuk in Tehillim Kuf Dalet in Psalm 104 is that sins should be finished on the earth. It doesn't say sinners, it says sins. And the end of the pasuk is, Urisham odeinam, and there will be no more evil people. So she explained to her husband, it's not that we have to get rid of the sinners, we have to get rid of the sins. And if we get rid of them, Rishayim odeinam, then there won't be any more evil people. What we have to do is work with these difficult people, try to make them into balei tshuva, try to make them into decent people, and not just rail at them, not just curse their existence. Another time, when unfortunately two of their sons passed away, you all know the story about how she spoke to her son ahead of time and said, if Hashem gives us something as a loan for us to watch over, she didn't say Hashem. She said, if we're given something to watch over, and then the owner comes to reclaim it, are we obligated to return it? And he said, of course. So then she took him up to the attic space where the two children who had unfortunately passed away were in their beds. And she said to him, Hashem nasan, quoting Eov, Hashem lakach, Hashem gave, Hashem took back, yihi shem Hashem avarach, blessing Hashem. So consoling him in advance for the loss that they were facing. She also is mentioned in the Gemara for freeing her sister from imprisonment. and when a scholar was too wordy in asking her a question about the way to go to Lud, he said, Be'ezah derech, melech l'Lud, extra words there. You didn't need derech, you didn't need the path, you didn't need melech will go. And she said to him, you should have just asked me, Be'ezah l'Lud, which way to Lud? And she quoted to him the Mishnah, Al tarbeh sicha ima isha, don't speak too much with a woman. Very interesting that she was telling him, don't speak too much to a woman. Now there is a story against Beriah that is in a Rashi, and the Rashi mentions that it's an oral tradition, it's not in the Gemara, and was a story that was meant to show that one should not have pride. So since that story is not in the Gemara, and since it's a late addition from about the 13th century, and we don't have any sources to back it up, I'm not going to quote that story. Understood. Okay. We have other instances of a number of learned women in the Gemara. There was Yalta, who was the wife of Rav Nachman, who was very sharp in the way that she counted things. We have the tradition of Benos Rashi, daughters of Rashi, who were very learned women. And our own time, the work of the Rakat Shavar, of Rav Yosef Rosen, whose work was called Safnas Paneach, Revealer of the Hidden, the name that was given to Yosef in Mitzrayim when he was the revealer of the hidden to Paro in his dreams. We would have lost all that work, all those chesavim, all those manuscripts. Rakat Shavar passed away in 1936. His daughter was living in Israel. She was married to Rabbi Sidran. She came back from Israel in the late 1930s to Dvinsk, which is where her father had been, and she saw that the end was imminent, and she and Rabbi Safran Fuchs, who was the Rav after her father in Dvinsk, put on microfilm as many of the ksavim, as many of the manuscripts of her father, of the Rakat Shavar, as they could, and as many of the hagos, as many of the side comments on his svarim, on his gemaros, that they could, and they shipped all these microfilms off to the United States. Unfortunately, the Nazis got there before she got out, and she was killed. So she gave her life to save her father's ksavim. And those ksavim were sent to the Safran family here in the Bronx, and they didn't really realize what this was all about, why their cousin, Rabbi Safran Fuchs, had sent all these microfilms from Rebbetzin Sitrin that belonged to Rabbi Rosen, to the Rakat Shavar, to Rabbi Yosef Rosen. And then fortunately, a member of the Safran family went to a family simcha, and Menachem, I'll think of his last name in a second. A Rav was there who understood the importance when he said, you know, we have all these microfilms, which the name will come to me as I'm talking. The computer just takes longer to learn it right at this point. What are all these something about? We don't know what all these microfilms are about. And the Rav he was speaking to understood the significance of what these microfilms were and took them and got a grant, ironically, through the claims conference for getting back some of what we lost in Europe, and set up a machon here at YU. And that's how all the ksavim of the Rakat Shavar were saved. And the same way Rebbetzin Beriah Huttner David understood what her father's work was, and she is not officially credited. I don't see it on the sefer itself, but it seems to be a known thing that she is the one who put out the Pachad Yitzchak of Rav Yitzchak Huttner. Again, because she was such a learned woman, she could do this. And I was very touched in going through certain svarim to find that Rabbi Binyamin Tomashov, who was a very great Lamdan who lived in Brooklyn in the 30s, I think through the 50s, in a sefer that he published in 1947, Avnei Shoham, in the Hakdama, he mentions that, and this is just absolutely taken casually, not as though this were something unusual he was doing. He says, Ishti ha-chashuva ha-maskeles, Rabbanus Maras Sarah Rivka Tichyat. And then he describes what she did to make it possible for him to write this sefer. And I have to give her, Ve'ekbal la bracha miyuchedes, I have to give her a special bracha that she made it possible for me to learn and to compose the Sefer. And I was so touched by this because there is a recognition on the part of a Lamdan of Hakaras HaTov, and this Hakaras HaTov goes to his wife as well, and he's not at all holding back. I won't even say the word embarrassed. If anything, he is happy to give credit where credit is due. I'll just mention that Rabbi Tomashov's grandson is Professor Yaakov Blitzstein. You may have heard of him. He has written on the Rambam, and he wrote a Sefer on Kibbutz Av Ha'Em, which has been translated into English, and he won the Israel Prize about 4 years ago for exceptional contributions to Jewish learning. So again, it seems to continue in the family. That grandfather and that grandmother both obviously had a good effect. But now there's a look at what went on after Rav Shim Shmuel Fol Hirsch had this idea. First of all, there's a myth around that women in Europe just sat in the kitchen and cooked, which is not so at all. Everybody was very involved in earning the living for the family. Nobody just sat at home and cooked. Women had to be literate. In order to daven, you have to be able to read Hebrew. And the entire Yiddish literature that flourished from the middle of the 19th century on was written for a female audience. So the women were literate. I would like to get statistics on this. I don't have statistics, but certainly the fact that an entire body of novels and short stories in great numbers, all this was written for a female audience, tells you that women knew how to read. And when I hear an isolated example and somebody tells me, no, my great-great-grandmother didn't know how to read, and what I ask each time, what I find out, is that that person lived on a farm, and maybe in very remote areas, women did not learn how to read. But for the most part, Jewish women did learn how to read, and certainly from the 19th century on. What happened? As it was recognized that schooling was becoming mandatory. We have to remember the whole idea of schooling as we know it, and public schools as we know them, is not that old. The whole idea of being required to be in school until what, a 16, is a 20th century innovation. That's not something that was around in earlier generations. But as young women started going to schools in Europe, and as it was recognized that they were getting an education that was often very much in conflict with their Jewish values, they were being encouraged to speak French, they were being encouraged to start a salon and to have wonderful intellectual discussions. And all that intelligence and all that effort was going out for non-Jewish interests and leading them away from Jewish life. In fact, I won't mention the name of the Gadol because eventually he did marry happily and did have a wonderful life with his wife. But in his first marriage, when he was only about 17 and the young woman was only about 16, he and his father-in-law got along beautifully. The problem was that the wife didn't agree with either one of them. And she was interested in her French studies and her French novels and her salons, and she could not understand what this husband was doing, spending all his time in the Beis Medrash. They very quickly divorced, and that was a sad outgrowth of the kind of education that women were getting then. And he went on to remarry, to lead a very happy life, and to become a Gadol B'Yisrael. And people saw that kind of thing happening and realized the girls must get at least equivalent education to what they were getting in the secular schools. You all know that the first Beis Yaakov was opened in Krakow in 1917, and the name that was taken is really based on two psukim, on two verses. One in the Chumash, Kol Samar LeBeis Yaakov, V'Sagid Livnei Yisrael, and we interpret that, tell it to Beis Yaakov, Elu HaNashim, that's to the women, and then Tagid Livnei Yisrael, and to the men, so the women should be taught. And the other pasuk is from Nevi'im, Beis Yaakov l'chuvenelcha b'or Hashem. Let us go, Beis Yaakov, the house of Yaakov, in the light of Hashem. But as I mentioned to you prior to that, Rabbi Yosef Karlbach, during World War I, had already started a school in Kovna. And Hashem sends us the right person at the right time. He had a doctorate from a university. So he combined lumdus, he combined Jewish scholarship, Jewish learning, together with secular knowledge. And one of the people who worked with him and taught for him was Dr. Leo Deutschlander, who later on went and took what he had learned from Rabbi Karlbach at that school in Kovna And when Agudas Yisrael wanted somebody to help Sara Schneerer spread her Beis Yaakov movement across Poland, it was Dr. Leo Deutschlander who was the organizer and the curriculum advisor and the person who got it going. So we see we have this legacy, Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, Rav Yosef Karlbach, Dr. Leo Deutschlander, and spreading across Europe. When people saw how successful the school in Kovno was, Rav Yosef Kahaneman, who was the Rav in Panovich, whom you know as the Panovich Rav, in 1928 opened a girls' high school in Panovich. Schools were also opened in a number of other places. Tells also had a Yavne school, and in fact, a friend and I visited a Rebbetzin in Yerushalayim, Rebbetzin Goldschmidt, who passed away, I think, at 103 last year. We were lucky to see her while she was still a young 99. And she told us what it was like at Yavne and showed us a wonderful picture on her wall of Yavne in Telz and Yavne in Kovno, the two girls' high schools, had an outing together where they all went on a boat trip down the river. And there you see this very wide picture, the kind of wide camera lens that they used to use for these kinds of pictures. And it's certainly over 100 girls. I didn't count how many, but it's a large group of girls. And it's the two high schools coming together for this trip. And this was from the 1920s. And I found it so touching to see that picture. Actually, it may have been from the early 1930s. And I'll just tell you quickly something that will come up in a moment in the source we're going to look at. She told me that they had to study five languages. In both Yavne schools, you had to study five languages. We'll see in a minute what the languages were. And she had her choice of French or English. And she said she doesn't know why she chose English as her fifth language. Then it turned out that when she married Rabbi Goldschmidt, he had been with the Slabach Yeshiva when it had opened in Hebron. And you know about the pogrom in 1929 when so many Yeshiva boys were unfortunately murdered. But he survived that. He came back to Europe and married her. But he still had the papers with the permission from the British government to allow him to go back to Palestine. So that in the late 1930s, when they married, they were able to go back, he on his original papers and she as his wife, they had permission to go back to Palestine, which was what saved their lives. But she said, who knew when I was a high school kid and I took English that this was going to be so important, because coming to Palestine at that time to deal with the authorities, knowing English was a tremendous plus. And she said, French wouldn't have done me anything. I have to look back at Yavne and the fact that they had us take five languages with such appreciation. There were many schools that opened. The Beis Yaakov schools, of course, became a tremendous force. And there were hundreds of Beis Yaakov schools in the end, before the end came. But there were different Yavne schools, and there were many other groups that had schools as well. Now I want to look at the pages that I gave you, which I think are really fascinating. So first of all, to look at the picture on the side where we looked at the Gemara from Sanhedrin, where we see an ad for a gymnasia, Torah V'Derech Eretz, in Riga. This was a school for girls in Riga, called very appropriately Torah V'Derech Eretz, because you were learning both. This is from the 1920s that it began. And it shows you the school and the address, and it tells us what they had at that point. One kindergarten, two Grundschule, elementary school, a Mittelschule, a middle school, and the Unterstrich, Unterrichtssprach, the language of instruction is Ifrit, is Hebrew. Everything in these girls' high schools was taught in Hebrew, both Limudei Kodesh, obviously, and Limudei Chol, the secular studies. In the Yavne schools and in this school in Riga, they were all taught in Hebrew. And I asked Rebbetzin Osband in Telz, who went to Yavne in Telz in Lithuania, did you really study everything in Hebrew, even physics, even biology, even history? She said everything was in Ivris, everything. And in fact, to keep up your Hebrew, the teachers used to write to the students during the summer, and the students had to write back in Hebrew. So I imagine that must have been quite an experience. You probably got your letters back corrected if you wrote to the teacher in Hebrew. But this was the way that they kept up the Hebrew with the students because they felt that was such an important thing to have a good knowledge of Hebrew. And certainly the person who headed the school in Riga was named Rabbi Charakov, and he later made it to the United States, and he headed the curriculum development for the Lubavitch schools. He was an assistant to the Lubavitch Rebbe. So it's interesting that he got his start heading a girls' school in Riga. What you see next on the page is the Tachnit, is the program for a Chagiga, for a celebration of Chanukas HaGymnasium, the inauguration of a gymnasium, and a gymnasium, you know, was a name for a school in Europe, that was held Chanukah, oh, just right around this time, on the 7th of Chanukah, Tov Resh Pei Aleph. So Tov Resh Pei Aleph means it was held in 1920. And you see the date there, the 12th of December, 1920. Now look at the way the celebration was done. The opening was in the new building of this gymnasium at 1 o'clock. They had a Ne'um Sicha Shel Adonenu Moreinu Rabbeinu HaGaon Av Beis Din Depo. The person who was the Av Beis Din, the head of the community, and you know in Tels it was the same person, heading both the community and heading the yeshiva. So that time it was Rav Yosef Leib Bloch who came to speak. Then you had somebody from the Vav Hanhala, from the administration, from the directorate, from the Morim, from the faculty. And then you had the Birkas Neros Chanukah, because of course it was being done during Chanukah. Then later on, at 6 o'clock that evening, in the Ulam Hara'i Noah, and in case we didn't know what that new word was in Hebrew, it's the Kina. Kina in European, whichever language it was there, I guess it was Lithuanian, meant the theater. And this was at 6 o'clock. That's where we have the word cinema, same origin, Kina. So there was a psicha from the Chaver Van Hahanala, somebody who was a member of the administration opened it up. But then interesting, you had a makhela singing, you had a choir singing, because of course in Litvisha circles, if it's a group that's singing, girls are permitted to sing. And then you had a hatzagas machzei ladim, you had the presentation of a little dramatic thing for the children, which was done Hayidei Talmidos HaGymnasion. It was done by the girls who were students in the school. You had Zimra by a Makhela. You had a song by the choir. Brachos L'Chagiga, blessings for the celebration. Deklamim, declamations, because oratory was an important thing at that time, and people used to get up and give talks, give orations. So that's what was done next. Then more Zimra. Then a Tmuna Chaya, which is a living, one second, I wrote down the word for it because I knew I would forget it. A living portrait. It's a living portrait where you act out things in front of the group, and then Sfirah, then the closing. And then, of course, being a proper celebration, Mizmor and Tizmoret. Okay, so there was food afterward. But that tells you what was going on at that time and how a celebration was done of a new school, a new building for a school for girls, with the participation of the Rosh Yeshiva of Tells. But then I find even more interesting, the next page, I don't know what the words are in Lithuanian at the top, but I do recognize that the words gymnasio, Telsios, so that means for the Tells gymnasium, for the Tells school. But then it's in Hebrew, so you can read that. Snif Yavne, Tells. Snif Yavne. This is this particular group of Yavne. It means that there were other Yavne schools, and I mentioned to you, in Kovna, in Ponovich, in Kelm, Yavne was franchised. So this was just one example. Okay, here's what they were teaching the girls, the second line, Abasis ha-Yahadus ha-Masoratis l'umis, based on an understanding of Judaism according to the Masorah, and according to our nation. And of course, this was very important in Europe in 1920 when nationalism was prevailing, and to say that there is such a thing as a Jewish nation. And here's what they were saying. They were going to open Arba Machlatos HaGymnasia, Ushtei Machlatos HaMechina Sha'al Yada. Underlined again. This was not underlined by me. It must have been underlined by whoever the person was that saved these papers and gave them into the archives. There would be four classes of the high school, and two classes of machina, of preparation. Now that definitely reflects the fact that it was in Tells, because Tells, the yeshiva, had admissions exams, and if they felt that a student was not ready yet, for example, the boys who came from America to Tells, they were put into a machina class to prepare them to go into a proper shiur. And Tells was famous for that, for everything being very organized and for having tests, and it was no just, I'm in Near or I'm in Lakewood. If you were in Tells, you were there for a very misdar experience with entrance exams, with testing, and with progression from one shiur to another. Now, who do they have help from in this? Dr. Levy from Berlin, because Germany was the most civilized country at that time and was considered the model for how you run a proper curriculum. And as you know, Sarah Schnierer was helped by Dr. Grunfeld, again, because she had the doctorate in education from Berlin, she was the person to help. But look at what the Mikzaot HaLimudim were. Look at what the subjects were that they studied. Ivrit, of course, Hebrew. Litais, Lithuanian, because you were living in Lithuania. Ashkenazis, German, because Germany was the cultivated language at the time, the language of cultured people. Rusis, Russian, but Sarfatis, and French. That was considered the average student's load in Yavne, in Tells. This was true in Yavne, in Kovna, and in Panovich, and in all these schools as well. You took five languages, and this way you could function well wherever you might be, both intellectually and simply for getting along with the different countries all around you. Because as you know, the borders were very often changing, and you were dealing with different people occupying your country. You had to know all these languages. Chumash, Nevi'im, Halachos, Va'agados, Koros Ha'ivrim, Jewish history, Historia Clolis, general history, Mathematica, mathematics, Geographia, geography, Teva, biology, or science in general, Teva is really science. Leches Yad, handcraft, Siur, art, Zimra, singing, Hitamud, gym. So this was quite a beautiful curriculum that the girls had, covering all kinds of possibilities. And very organized again, Bechinot HaKnisa, the entrance exams, Tzitchalna, Tchilas Cheshvan, Tofresh Pe'alav. And then all the pratim about how to try to become part of this wonderful new experiment. In not even experiment, at that time they knew what they were doing already. At this wonderful new instance of education for girls. Halavai, that we would learn what the girls learned then. If you want to find any woman who knows Dikduk today, either she was lucky enough to have survived and is now in her 80s or 90s and carries forth what she learned in Yavne and Tells, or she taught other women who are now teaching Dikduk. But I have found that when it comes to knowing Hebrew grammar, there's absolutely nobody like the people who were taught at Tells. Okay, so if there's been a change now, it's that what used to be available only to a select number of women who went to one of these schools is really now available for everyone. And when it came to Gemara learning, what used to be for girls who learned in their home with their fathers or their husbands or their brothers, now again, it's available to everyone. And if you want to now study, you can study on the internet, you can go to the virtual based medrash of the Yeshivat Har Sion. You can go to Lukched, the Lukstein School of Jewish Education, and find out from their website so many different places that you can study. The OU has a Nach Yomi, a daily study of Nach, where you can go through all of Nevi'im and Ksuvim together with a whole group on the internet. There are wonderful, wonderful books in English. Whatever anybody may have to say about Art Scroll, it certainly opened up a lot of Jewish sources to a lot of people who would not be able to find them if not for the fact that they're in English. We have this wonderful program that Rebbe Simchana Henkin began, of the Yoatzot Halacha, who answer questions on Jewish marriage halachot for women. It's a 2-year program, and I will mention that my daughter-in-law, Noah Jesselson, did the program, studied very hard for 2 years, and now, 2 nights a week, it's called being on the kav, being on the line. She has a dedicated telephone, and 2 nights a week, she goes into the room where that telephone is, she closes the door to guard the women's privacy, and from 8 o'clock until 11 o'clock at night, and often it goes on until 12 o'clock at night, because it's coming in from all around the world, she answers questions on the line that is dedicated for these questions. And of course, she will never, ever go into detail, but she did tell me that so many of the questions are questions that a woman would have never asked a man. And that's why the Yoatzot Halacha are so important, because they can answer directly, they understand exactly what the women are asking, and it's just a whole different experience. And of course, even after the 2-year training, which includes biological and medical understanding as well, so there are times when she would tell a woman that you really have to see a doctor, and there were times when she will say, I can't answer that, and there are people within Rebbetzin Henkin's school to whom they can go if there are questions that they feel are beyond their competence. But she said that those 6 or 7 hours a week on the phone, she feels are so significant, and that the Yoatzot Halacha are a wonderful, wonderful innovation. You know also that there are now women who are trained to go to the Beis Din with a woman who unfortunately is facing a get, and to be Toanot, to be there for the women when it comes to facing a Beis Din for a divorce. But in happier ways, there are so many ways that women can study now. We have varied school systems, ranging from Hasidic school systems, where in some of them, girls are still taught, really, Torah Shebaal Peh, oral Torah, because they don't study from text, to schools that emphasize Dinim, to schools that emphasize Tanakh, to schools that emphasize Mishnah. It's really remarkable what a variety of places a woman has now and a young girl has to study. And it's interesting to me that Tamar El-Or, an Israeli anthropologist, wrote her first book in 1994. She studied ultra-Orthodox Jewish women and their world. She was actually studying a group of women from a particular Hasidic sect. And she felt that they were chachamot uvorot, that they were very wise, but they were ignorant. And the name of her, no, it was called Mulumadot Uvorot. The name of her book in English is Educated and Ignorant, because she felt that the women were being taught, and this is what she was finding in their curriculum and in talking with them and talking with their teachers, to do things just the way their mother did, and not to actually benefit from the knowledge of Jewish texts that they could have had. But then she was told that you're only looking at one small sect within the Hasidic world. Why don't you go and study some women who are learning more? So after that, she went to a medrashah, a school for women, at Bar Ilan, and now she wrote a book that translated into English is Next Year I Will Know More. And here, the young woman had said to her, well, we don't know enough yet, but we're going to keep learning all our lives, and we hope to know more and more. There's now a place called Sahali, which is a pre-army program to prepare girls halachically, emotionally, spiritually, if they're going to go into army service in Israel. At the same time, there's something called the Haredi College for Women, which was started by Adina Bar Shalom, and it's a wonderful, wonderful innovation. She's a daughter of Rav Avadi Yosef, and she saw that the Sephardic community was being treated, she felt sometimes with contempt, and certainly with very little understanding, by psychologists and social workers who came to work with them. And she came to her father, and she said, we really have to have psychologists and social workers who know what Sephardic minhagim, what Sephardic customs are all about, and what our life is all about. And her father agreed with her, so she tried to do it in the least controversial way possible. She said she was only going to have 2 majors at first, psychology and social work, and then, on good advice, she also added computer science, because that's how people would be able to find jobs. And she worked out a wonderful program. Many of the women that she was hoping to help had not gotten high school diplomas in Israel. You know that there's the Bagrut, the matriculation exams in Israel. They had not sat for those exams. So she made a preparatory program for a year or two to bring the young women up to the standard that they had to be in order to go into a college-level program. She also provided babysitting, and I visited that school, and if all children's nurseries were run the way that nursery is run, kids kids would have a very good experience on the first time they had to go away from their mothers. It was a big, beautiful room, certainly as big as this room, not as tall as this room, not as high as this room, but as big as this room, and with different kind of stations all around it, places for kids to play with blocks, places for kids to paint, places for kids to lie down and rest. A bright, sunny, beautiful room with many women there to care for the children. It was not one woman there to take care of 15 children, but very good care. And she said because she had this right in the school building where the mothers were, if a mother was nursing, she could come and nurse her baby. Or if a baby was not feeling well, the mother could really be gotten out of class to come and see what the baby needed. So that the women were being given every advantage in both being prepared academically for what they were going to do and recognizing that obviously their first requirement was proper care for their children. She made arrangements because she knew she couldn't make a whole college. This would be much too expensive and much too complicated. So she made arrangements with different schools, with Hebrew University, with Hadassah Hospital, with Bar-Ilan University, with Ben-Gurion University, arranging for professors from those universities to come and give the courses, and arranging for accreditation through those universities. So that she was having a very small school with a particular charter just to give degrees in three areas, but to have recognized universities providing the education and providing the curriculum within each area. At first she was heavily criticized, and she told me that she came to her father and she said, "They're writing articles against me in the newspapers. This is terrible." And her father said, "You have to have a father like Avadia Yosef to handle this." He said, "Adina, journalists, what do they know about halacha? I'm a rav. I'm telling you the community needs this. You do it. Pay no attention to all the criticism." So she paid no attention to the criticism. She made the school. It has been so successful that, first of all, Ashkenazic young women who had a Beis Yaakov education and who wanted to go on but didn't want to go to a conventional college came and asked could they join the Haredi College for Women as well. And then men asked if they could have the same training, especially computer science, which is what a number of the young men who are spending their lives learning now wanted to do to earn a living. So now the school is open for women in the early hours. I think it's from 8 o'clock till 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock, I'm not sure. Then there's a hiatus, I know whether it's an hour or 2 hours, and then it becomes a school for men. And then the men are able to get the same kind of preparation for the education and the same education. And I say, Kol HaKavod to Adina Bar Shalom. What a favor she has done. I won't go into all the different possibilities. You all know about how many wonderful places there are to learn and how many opportunities there are for all of us. I would hope that in the future, we're not going to pretend that if a woman studies Gemara for a few years in a Drisha program or a GPAS program at Stern, the Advanced Talmud Study Program at Stern, that that's going to in any way compare to a man who has spent all his time, from the time he first started learning Gemara, well into his 20s or 30s, learning. There's just no comparison. So we're not trying to pretend that we're making people into what they are not. What we are doing is getting people connected to Torah, getting people to practice halacha much more carefully, and hopefully realize that it's the obligation of every one of us to share the good fortune that we have of learning, to share that with every Jew that we can. Thank you. Now I have to collect those source sheets. Yes. Ah, thank you. I must mention Nechama Leibowitz, who revolutionized the whole study of Chumash in our time and was an exceptional teacher. And in fact, what's written on her matseva, what is written on her gravestone? Just one word, Mora, just teacher, because that's what she considered her life work. A woman who was tremendously humble, very, very quiet within herself, but did a wonderful job of teaching and bringing the study of Chumash up to the level that we're at today. Thank you for asking me to mention her.